I'd like to call to order February 16th, 2023 Stormwater Utility Commission meeting. Can I have a roll call of the commissioners?
Commissioner Crocker?
Here.
Commissioner Hawkinson?
Here.
Commissioner Mattson?
Here.
Dave Parker and William Thomas are excused. We have a quorum.
I'd like to do our call to the audience first thing we do. Do we have anyone on the phone right now?
Thank you.
We have no one that wants to speak, so I'm not going to be prepared unless I have to.
Okay.
All right. Our next thing is our council days and comments with council member Harry Green. If you have any comments for us.
Just a comment about how helpful Stormwater Division Manager was in providing information I needed for council planning. He came up with the right stuff at the right time and was very helpful. So, Mr. Spiker is a real gem.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Green. Our next item is the Director's Report. This is informational only, and we're not going to have a discussion. So, Mr. Spiker, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair Crocker, Commissioner members. A couple of things for you here. You may have heard on Tuesday, Valentine's Day, there was a hazardous material spill on I-10 over by a semi-truck carrying liquid nitric acid crashed, presumably due to the wind. It killed the driver and put into effect a shelter in place and a limited evacuation order for the immediate area. The Department of Public Safety, their Hazard Materials Response Unit, was on scene along with some partnering agencies to respond. They had mentioned prolonged exposure to the low concentrations of nitric acid or long-term exposure to small concentrations can result in adverse health effects. So this was a pretty big deal for us, and it shut down I-10 for multiple days. Again, because it was so windy on Tuesday, the broadcast of that smoke was sent out to the region, and that's why we all got notices on our phone, and even all the way up here in Oro Valley, just to use caution in the area. If you had pre-existing health conditions, they were very concerned about those folks. But they have since kind of cleaned that up and opened things back up. They're still doing air monitoring and soil monitoring to make sure there's no long-term effects. I want to bring up another issue that we saw recently, similar regard to the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. That was a significant event. Lots of toxic material spilling into the ground, the waterways. They decided to actually burn all of those chemicals rather than them going into the ground or water supply. They thought the best course of action was just to burn it and let it go into the air where it can dissipate a little quicker. I'm still kind of following that to see what the EPA is going to be doing. They are out monitoring the water samples, similar to what we just saw here over at I-10, but at a much more significant level. I'm really interested to see what the accountability is to Norfolk Southern Railway. I know they've got environmental engineers working for them routinely, but I really want to try to understand, as an event unfolds, what are the steps local agencies might be able to take or participate in, monitoring, inspections, notifications. Those things are applicable to any emergency situation, so understanding how they're doing at a very high level can give you some insights on how we might be able to operate for a similar incident in our little neighborhood here. So anyway, seems like it's all cleaned up at I-10, but there's still lessons to be learned from all that stuff. So very interesting to follow. And again, I feel bad for the driver and their families. But again, the long-term effects for everybody in the surrounding neighborhood, it's critical to keep monitoring.
Is somebody monitoring our groundwater after that nitric acid spill?
Yeah, that'd be ADWR and ADEQ.
Okay.
Both of them kind of respond to that because we're looking at groundwater leaching. and trying to take samples. We do have monitoring wells, particularly in that area.
Okay.
But because Tucson pumps so much groundwater out, we've got several monitoring wells out throughout the region that we can take samples on.
Thank you.
Next thing I've got here, the mayor and town manager's office has been contacted by Senator Mark Kelly's office in regard to providing federal assistance or federal needs that the town might have. The stormwater utilities got three hazard mitigation grants applications into FEMA right now. As Scott is well aware, they're somewhat dragging their feet, so we've pushed that request out to the mayor's office to see if they can ascertain the status for us and see if there's any supplemental information we might need to provide. Similarly, we've got two FEMA floodplain remapping projects that are sitting on FEMA's desk right now. The Lachoya Wash Complex out to the east side of town and the Mutter Push Rooney complex over on the west side of town. Those, one of the grants have just been bogged down at FEMA, so we put that request in just to see if they can give us a better status and help push these things along for us. As we will get to in our budget scenarios, those grant applications are pretty important for our bottom line. And although the state DEMA group, the Department of Emergency and Military Affairs, have ranked the projects, until it gets approved by FEMA, we're kind of just in wait mode, which isn't the best place to be. But I figure I'd bring that along. That was excellent to hear from Senator Kelly's office, and they're trying to help even little shots out like that. So that would be great to hear. And Commissioner Chair Crocker, that is all I have for director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Crocker. We'll move to the first agenda item number one, which is the review and approval of the January 19, 2023 meeting minutes. Commissioners, you've gotten copies of it. Are there any additions or corrections that need to be made to the minutes? Let me know if you wish to speak. Okay.
Minutes be accepted as written.
I second.
That was Commissioner Hawkinson moving and Commissioner Mattson second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So moved that we approve the January 19, 2023 meeting minutes. We'll move then to agenda item number two, discussion of meetings and events. Mr. Spiker, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Crocker. I was trying to get ahead of myself here. So we've got a couple of different things I want to direct your attention to. Foremost was our outreach event, and Mr. Bennett actually ran this particular outreach event for us, the Wilson K-8 STEAM Outreach Night at their campus here off of Glover and Lachoya. This is an opportunity for the kids at the school to get to talk to or meet some, I'll call them STEAM-related agencies, but they're really bringing in anybody that's willing to talk to the kids. But Scott was able to kind of demonstrate a watershed table and showing how pollutants can move down from the tops of mountains and make their way through streams, through homes, and through subdivisions, really demonstrating to the kids how water sources get polluted. It's a very hands-on activity board, though some of the kids want to treat it like a toy and move things around. But it's a really pretty bad. Interactive display and really gets the kids kind of excited to see, again, just could be sediment, it could be toxins, how easily they can move through waters and get transported from the upper watersheds down to people's homes and into their wells, if you will. Scott, how many people do you think showed up there?
Oh, there were well over 100. Yeah. I mean, I don't have an exact number because I was a one-man show and I didn't have time to operate the clicker. But there were quite a few, and it came in waves. So at one time you'd have nothing, and then there'd be 20 kids standing there 2 minutes later.
And so that's a regular outreach that we do. That's a school we partner with pretty regularly. Our water utility group was there as well, talking about water conservation. So a great opportunity to push our messaging out there and talk to some little kids, hopefully getting them excited about keeping their water clean and helping Oral Valley be beautiful. So we certainly appreciate Scott's effort with that. Secondly, I want to push your attention to the Pima County Flood Control District meeting. We had that yesterday. Of interest out of that meeting, Supervisor Steve Christie was asking about the flood-prone land acquisition program, the FLAP program. And the Pima County Flood Control District uses that program to acquire properties that are subject to flooding. Currently, they're targeting the Finger Rock watershed, which is just right around the corner from us here, a little bit east of the Westward Look Resort. So they had some really bad flooding this monsoon season and last. So they've identified 8 properties to buy. Mm. They just acquired the first one, which was an elderly care facility up in the foothills there, that dead middle in the floodplain. A terrible place for an elder care facility when they become trapped with waters or the utilities go out. We really can't afford to have those things happen to people with needs. So they've acquired that, but Supervisor Christie asked the question, do these acquisitions come before the county board? The answer was no. It's only if it's above $250,000 or if the appraisal and the offer are 25%. Different from one another. I would like to bring in the county to talk to us about the FLAP program. We don't have a tremendous need in Oro Valley. We don't have repetitive flood areas because we do such a good job in planning and floodplain management. But there may be a time and place here that we do need their help in acquiring some properties. So I'd like to ask them to come present to us in the near future and have you guys better understand what our partners are doing as far as keeping people flood safe. So I found that to be an interesting topic, and I'd like them to share that with you guys. Any questions on our meetings and events?
We have no questions. So thank you, Mr. Spiker. Let's move to agenda item 3, presentation discussion of stormwater utilities cartographic asset management process. Mr. Spiker, please introduce your staff and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Crocker. I'm going to have Scott drive this thing. You guys all have the agenda item in front of you, but I'm going to open up the presentation and I'll let Scott drive us around here. So we are required through our stormwater management plan and our MS4 program for ADEQ to map and track our assets through the town. So we've been very diligent since we brought on the asset management software system Cartograph, and that was done in 2016. So we've got a graphic here of all of our public and private drainage assets, and the legend kind of describes what those are, but we've got a ton of them all over the place. So it's our job at the stormwater utility to go around and monitor and inspect all of these particular assets. Now, we've set a goal of inspecting 20% of our assets in any given year. So in theory, by year 5, we should have inspected every single one of our assets and at least seen them once. We have since the inception of this kind of gone through and put some additional rating categories on those. We can all imagine there's certain assets that require a bit more inspection than just once every 5 years. So we're going to kind of walk you through how we do that, how we rate these things, how we assess these things, how we're able to have our operations group or have a contractor come in and perform some needed maintenance on those. So again, we're taking a global scale there at everything. Somebody had asked the question at the last meeting, what are our outfall, we collect that laboratory sample. So we consider these some assets as well. These are our outfalls, and you can see we've got 5 of them loaded up for ADEQ. mostly surrounding the CDO, that is our biggest water course. So that is the area we desire to protect. We want to make sure the water going into the CDO is clean and free of toxins and pollutants. So that's kind of where we monitor for ADEQ. Next slide, please. So that top slide there, we're going to talk about some of our assets. What are those? For the layperson here, on the upper left, we have a roadway catch basin that intercepts the rainwater or runoff coming down a roadway and enters the storm drain system. So we've got those broken out as a separate asset. Moving next to the left on the top, we've got constructed channels. That one's at the villages of La Cunada, just south of Lambert's, near La Cunada. That has a direct outfall into the CDO. It's built out of soil cement. That's why we call it a constructed channel instead of a natural channel. Next one over, the top right, is a culvert underneath the roadway. You know, the difference between a culvert and a storm drain is really the infrastructure. We see head walls, we see aprons on that culvert, so we consider that a separate asset than just the storm drain pipe itself. Down in the bottom left, a detention basin. Those are used to regulate flows coming off of any one development. As you put down more rooftops, as you put down more impervious surface, sidewalks, roadways, you are going to increase the runoff from your site. So how do we control that from all going downstream? We utilize detention basins on many of our developments here. All the stormwater is collected and then released a little bit slower than what it would under normal conditions. Middle bottom there is a storm drain pipe. We use that just to designate a pipe. There's no head walls, there's no additional structures with it. It's just a pipe. So we've got that broken out as a separate corridor. And then as we talked about in the up map, we've got our outfalls. And that's a picture of one of our outfalls, a drainage channel directly releasing into the CDO. So we're capturing those as assets as well. So that kind of gives you a visual of what we're talking about here. Now we're going to jump into, well, how do we inspect them? What are we actually looking for when we're out here? So we have come up with, and this is modeled after our roadway, our engineering group's pavement condition categories, and we're using an overall condition index, the OCI rating system. And it's solely based on the install date. That's kind of structure number one. The initial rating is just based on how old is it. So usually a good gauge. Everything has a life cycle, so that's a good place to start. And then we go into an actual inspection for operation. And we use that operation category for deficiencies. If we see erosion happening, if we see sediment building up in that culvert box, those would be operational issues that would lower an asset's rating. So we've got an ability to look at the structure itself and then the surrounding area to see how it's actually operating. And then lastly, we've got a recommended action. Doesn't really impact the rating, but it helps us understand what we need to do with that asset. Does it need to be monitored more? Does it need to be maintained? Does it need to have engineers review structural? Is there cracks in there? We have the ability to move that around with that recommended action. And we'll get to see that here in just a bit. So, again, the culvert structure itself is really the defining rating here. So we kind of do two things. We've got a star rating and then a number rating. Scott, Jane, and I sat and talked really long about how we go about doing these ratings. I wanted to simplify it all out so people really understood when you saw the rating, what does a 90 mean? We're from 0 to 100, so I wanted to use like an academic grading system. Everybody knows that an A is good, everybody knows a B is okay, everybody knows a C will pass, but you might need to start looking at it. D's and F's, if you're at 60 and 50, you've got to do something. So it's a quick, easy way to say, all right, we've got a rating number. Actually, it's a good idea that it's either doing well or, man, we better jump on that thing. And then, you know, people like Amy, people like Paul Kiesler, they can go look at those numbers too and have a really quick idea of how our assets are doing And the star rating's not too bad either, 1 through 5 stars, but I don't have a way to correlate that per se. You should know 5 stars is good, but that was already in Cartograph. That was a big programming function, so it was already built in, but we wanted the number rating, so we put that into place. Covert operations, we talked a little bit about that. We can slide that back and forth based upon what we see out in the field, and that affects the overall rating, which is nice. And then the recommended action, that drop-down menu here that you guys see, this is really, it drives or tells us what we need to be doing with anything. No action, you're doing fine. Monitored yearly, I mentioned we're doing 20% every 5 years. If Jane flips that to monitored yearly, that tells us it's seen quite a bit of action. So there's either erosion's already starting or cracking's already starting. We better start looking at it a little bit more often. Monitor after storm events. These are very specific. If we know areas that are a little more uncontrolled or see heavier rainfalls than others, we're going to flip those to monitor after storm events. So we can see just after the monsoon season, we've got a certain set of assets we got to get out to and make sure the debris is cleaned up so that it doesn't cause any flooding or it doesn't cause the asset to fail. Create request. That's when we know we need a maintenance activity to happen. We can flip it to a request and send it over to our operations group, send it over to our transportation group, send it out to a contractor. We can go there. Asset does not exist. We're just getting rid of that. But we still want to keep the asset on the books. Even if it goes away, we still want to know that we had it at some point in time. So even if it's abandoned, we still want to keep the record of that. And then send a division manager, i.e. me. That's when our inspectors aren't quite sure what to do. They can flip it to that, and then it comes up to my workflow, and I can see it and say, oh, hold on. We've got to amass the team and go take a peek at it. So this really gives our inspector the ability to move these things forward without having to talk to everybody every single time. You guys saw the volume of assets. You could not realistically have to come back to your manager every single time you're out inspecting. So we're trying to arm our inspectors with information and the ability to move these things forward without having their hand held every single time. So we've got a pretty good setup right now. We're just going back now and making sure everything has a rating and that it's getting addressed appropriately. Next slide, Scott. So now we're going to walk through an example of how all this kind of works. Instead of just talking about it, we wanted to show you. So we got called, I believe, a couple years ago, Scott. This particular area inlet at Lambert and Pistachio. Again, it does have an asset ID number at the top, so we know which one it is. It's also mapped, so we know where it is. But we got a call. It was inundated by dirt. You can see there's some dirt around there. Okay? So we would then send the inspector out. Next slide. And this is what Jane found out there. Somebody had covered it up, and a whole bunch of dirt was just kind of sitting over the top of that area inlet. So she went out, took a peek. Recommended action, monitor yearly as the sand was inundated out here. And it's in a flow path, so she flipped that to monitor yearly. Put a rating on it there. We got our OCI, that's our rating, 88. Not doing too bad. And excellent condition there. We can also spread out costs. So $12. $12. Jane probably spent about an hour out there. You have to drive out there, she's taking pictures, she's looking at it. So we're assigning some labor costs, equipment costs for the car, some labor costs for her time. That way, if Andy wants to pull the numbers up, well, how much money did you spend on that culvert inspecting it? We can generate something. It seems weird, though, but we do have the ability to capture that. And then we actually get to the inspection report itself. As we can see, the structure seemed fine. It's at 90. That means it's doing all right. Operationally, though, it had a lot of sand around there. So we needed to do something about that. Recommended action there, just monitor yearly because it's getting a lot of sand in it. But she came back in and talked to me. I'm like, well, we need it cleaned out. We got to flip that to create a request. Still within Cartograph. We flip it out to our operations group. and tell them, hey, there's sand over here covering up this area inlet. Can you guys go remove the sand? And they've got the location, they've got pictures. So they'll go out and they create a work task. That's right there. That's the number. So if Amy wants to see that, we want to see that, we can dive back into cartograph. A resident calls us about it. I go right to that task, and they've got a scheduled date to start. I can relay that back to our customers and clients. And similarly, once they do the work, they can break down how much money and time they spend cleaning that up. So again, it gives the activity there. We've got the asset number, so it's all encapsulated within cartograph. Next slide. Once we're done cleaning it up, we have to go reinspect it. We don't want the low OCIs hanging out. We want to get them back up above 70. So we will go back out once it's done and reinspect it. Structure's still at 90, but operationally now it was cleaned off. It's back up to 100. So the rating was previously 88, it went back up to 91. So we have the ability to put little notes in here. Inlet's been cleared of sediment, is ready for the monsoon season. This asset will remain in a monitor yearly recommended activity category due to conditions of a continuous supply of sediment. So we're going to keep looking at it. Next slide. And here's what it looked like after the cleaning. So we want our operations groups, our contractors, taking pictures afterwards. So we have a really good idea of, is this rating real? Yeah, sure looks like it. Looks pretty good. Actually, looks really good. So,
is there a date on when they do that up there in your...
Go back up, Scott.
In that little summary.
So, no, it's not there. Go up one more. Let me see if they...
There was when you've done the work...
Yes, we have a date.
We do have a date. Okay.
There is, and we don't have them on here, but there's a date for tasks scheduled. There's a date for inspections when they're happening. So when we go back out, we get another date of when we're back out there. So all those dates are captured. If this was a complaint-driven request, so a resident calls us up, hey, this storm drain grade is full of dirt. We'll track that. Pages involved in that all the time. That's usually how we find some of these. Somebody calls us up. There's a pothole in the road. We'll get logged in, and then we look at them and assign tasks to them. So we are tracking who calls us, unless it's anonymous. We're tracking dates, and then what the complaint is, and then what the activity was. So we are tracking all of that, Gary. And I believe that was it, Scott, right?
I believe so, yeah.
So that gives you a rough idea what our stormwater utility inspectors are looking at for assets. And what do we have, like 6,000 assets out there, Scott? Something in that neighborhood?
Yeah, it's
a pretty large amount. The nice thing is, for a lot of these, this storm drain grate is tied to a storm drain pipe. So there's going to be assets sitting on top of one another. So we might be able to knock out 3 or 4 inspections all at the same time.
What did you say, 6,000 assets?
I think it's over 7,000.
Commissioners, I'd just like to point out, say a kudos to these guys, only because... Before Scott was hired with the last increase, that position was created, our inspector position was done. When we started this, we thought we had 618 assets. Now we're over 7,000.
Oh, wow.
And that is a direct result of John Spiker's group and Scott here. And this is such a fabulous database. I mean, it's got the pictures, it's got the OCI. When people say, well, how much time are those ops guys spent on stormwater thing? I've got the data.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd shout out to my guys. They've got this all documented. They've gone a long way in what, since 2016?
Yep.
Since 2016. And this has really taken this long to create this database, because I think Paul came up to me and asked me a question about how long does it do? I go, I don't have that data. But now we have the data, we have the photos. So I just, this is a truly a wonderful tool. They've even, I think, showed it off to others how the cartograph was not made for this purpose. They've adapted it, and it's great to watch.
Pretty amazing.
Mr. Hawkinson.
I agree with Amy that since the beginning of this, even going further back, and since Scott came on, it's made tremendous gains in information and what the town has got documented. The one question I have is, what are the other jurisdictions in the greater Tucson area doing? Do they have something similar?
Commissioner Hawkinson, yes and or no. I know Marana is using cartograph City of Tucson.
I don't think so.
No.
Every region that has an MS4 permit, though, Commissioner Hawkinson, is required to map their assets. Maybe not inspect them per se, but they are tasked with mapping their assets. And we're not seeing it. Even our friends over at Pima County Flood Control, they don't have the extent of the assets mapped like we do. It requires a tremendous amount of time to go out and map these, to assess them, to document tasks, to take citizen complaints and put them into the system. You need resources for that. And I've told you guys before, we're the only entity in the region collecting a stormwater fee. Kudos to Amy and Paul for recognizing that as a need to satisfy those permits and setting something up to take care of it. We might be going a bit above and beyond, but all of that data is extremely useful. As a subdivision gets planned and designed and next to an existing one, well, that's sure nice to know the conditions of all that existing infrastructure. Do we need to ask for off-site improvements to improve the existing infrastructure or allow it to flow better? But it's sure nice to have all that at your fingertips rather than going back out and surveying it right then and there. We don't have to be as reactionary. We can be more proactive because we put all this data into the cartograph system. Rich, do you have another follow-up?
No, go ahead. Yeah. I have a follow-up, but go ahead.
This is Commissioner Croft. Do you have like an average or data on what our average conditions are, like we had 90s, 70, or is there a bell curve? Just in general, to get an idea.
So I had Scott pull all 6,000 assets. I did not run an average for you, Chair Crocker. We can't do that, but we were looking at the numbers. I'm going to venture a guess. We've got 80%+ of our assets, and it's probably higher than that, but I'm going to say about 80% of ours are sitting over 70 rating.
Okay.
So that tells me the operation structure of our condition, our current assets are good. We don't have this immediate need that everything's failing and we've got to rip it all out and replace it. We do have some old infrastructure. We really do. We have stuff that's going on 50, 60 years old out here. And some of it does need to be replaced. But the work that our operations group is doing, our roadway guys are out fixing roads all the time. We're now looking at Shannon Road getting improved. All those dip sections where the washes cross, we're asking for those to be improved to carry that sediment and water across more effectively, replace the headers on the roadway. So we're incrementally replacing some of the older things as we can get to them. But we're mostly in the positive, so that makes me feel really good about it. And that is backed up by Gene's inspections in the field. So I really like where we're sitting today. I'm going to go to Mo, and then we'll come back to Commissioner.
You're touching on what I was concerned about. What is the first culvert that you showed us? What's the lifespan of something like that is question one. And question two, are there new construction methods that are lengthening the lifespan? There, yeah. Drop down one. That guy.
Yeah.
What's the lifespan of one of those guys?
There's industry standards, Council Member Green. This is a concrete reinforced box culvert. There's steel inside of this sucker. Traditionally, things like this, nobody would expect it to last more than 100 years.
Okay.
But they usually put a 50-year rating on those.
Okay.
But they really are subject to the conditions of the environment.
Sure.
Out here in the desert Southwest, again, it's not that cold, though people would probably argue with me this week. So we don't have that freeze-thaw expansion as much. Now, we do heat up, but again, we don't see the wear and tear on our infrastructure in the desert Southwest like you do elsewhere. We also have very deep groundwater tables, so you don't see a lot of water getting up into the foundations, really kind of beating those things apart. We do have some alkalinity in our soils here, but not too much that attacks concrete, so buried pipes don't seem to be as affected like they might in the Midwest or back in the East Coast. So the conditions are right to let these things hang out for quite a while. We do see, you know, some of this plastic pipe, this stuff, and corrugated metal pipe, the CMPs, really thin gauge metal, those are easily bent and deflected by just driving over them. Roadway culverts or driveway culverts, you may have seen them in some neighborhoods, and they're all bent up and warped at the ends. There's usually some deflection on the inside too. So it really depends on the structure. That's why I like these culverts better.
Yeah.
You can see the robustness of all this infrastructure here. This thing is going to hold up a lot longer than something like this.
So,
but we do take that into consideration for our structural ratings.
So innovation really is prolonging the life of the new construction?
It certainly is. But quality control above anything.
Okay.
Are we getting the right mix designs, a consistent mix designs? Was the subgrade poured properly and compacted properly? Was it really built right? Or were they being lazy and they just slapped the pipe in the ground, covered it up, and walked away? Really, where inspections in our construction group at CED really helps us out. Hey, they're installing storm drain pipe. You need to get out there and see it before it's covered up. So once it's covered up, you really don't have any clue what happened. So very important that the design is right, that the construction is right, and that we're monitoring for maintenance over the long haul. So,
what is the kind of cost to do one of those versus one of those?
Well,
I need a ballpark. I'm not.
I would probably venture guess it's almost 10 times as much to do this. But this is a concrete type. This is just a plastic thing. So the excavation is still the same for both. But the material costs, the shipping costs, it's so much more expensive to have this stuff made and shipped to us than these things. You can almost buy at Home Depot. So, Commissioner Hawkinson.
What does ADEQ expect in terms of level of information or quality of information from the different jurisdictions involved in the MS4 program in order to meet EPA's needs and assessing how effective the programs are in different areas? It seems to me like Oral Valley is at the top level of having great information and being able to answer a lot of questions, but if ADEQ were asked by EPA, how effective are the programs in the Tucson area?
That's a pretty broad topic here. What I will say, Commissioner Hawkinson, the bare minimum for assets, and I want to keep it in that realm for right now, the bare minimum is just a map. Well, that's GIS. That's not all that hard to go out in the field and capture some dots. That's not all that hard. But how effective or useful is that for the agency? It's nice to know where it is. I want to know what condition it's in, because that is affecting our bottom lines.
Yes.
And I really can't afford to have these things fail. That's really where we're at. We will be in a world of hurt placement. So that's really critical. As far as the EPA is concerned, that's why you're seeing those lab samples done at the Outfalls Ridge. They are interested in what is making its way into these water courses. We used to just get away with visual monitoring, where you just kind of look at it, take a picture, and okay, looks okay. Do you really know what's in the water? I can tell you if it's black or a little brown. I can tell you it may have smelled bad. But until you do lab analysis, you don't really know. And being a phase two, we're not held to the same standard as the big groups. Particularly for us up here in Oro Valley, we don't have any wastewater treatment plants discharging. We don't have any industrial complexes, though some might argue that Tana and Roush are somewhat industrial. They're not spitting out pollutants into the washes. So we don't really have too many big pollutant sources. We're worried about parking lots and the brake dust, the leaky oil, and then that gets washed away by the rain and the water courses. But we're benefited by not having any standing water. There's no reservoirs up here. There's no lakes up here. There's no special water up here. We don't have too many endangered or threatened species up here. There's not too many habitats for EPA-listed animals and plants. There's some, but in general, there's not a high value of vegetation species. So we aren't held to a real strict standard from that either. But we do pump a lot of groundwater out in the region. We really can't afford to have our groundwater supply polluted by runoff here. But all in all, Oro Valley is really fortunate to not have a lot of that big industrial complex. There's no oil refineries up here. There's no paint manufacturers up here. There's no tallow plants up here. So there's no mines up here. So we're really fortunate we don't have to look out for those things. But the EPA is now getting down to the small level of what is running off and into these big waterways. So that's about as much as I can share on average.
One last question.
Sure.
I looked at the list that you sampled for.
Yep.
And I looked through the results that you provided, and there was two analyses, antimony and barium.
Yep.
What do you reckon that could be associated with, or might it be just lab error?
I can't imagine it's lab error, though it could be. Those are the questions we're trying to get answered right now. Talking with our water utility folks that sample these things a little more, trying to reach out to the state and asking them what might be contributing to those positive results. Although they're still below the threshold, they did show up. So we want to know what could be contributing to that so that we can then start looking around the area and finding out who might be contributing to those. So, okay. Scott, go ahead.
I looked up antimony, and it's used in brake pads. So, it's cars.
Brake.
It's parking lots. It's cars. That's where it's coming. It's coming
yeah.
from cars. That's largely what I'm surmising. I'm not an expert, but if it's used in brake pads and cars leak and cars have brake pads that shed dust, that's where it's coming from.
And that's really why trying to get the parking lot swept and cleaned regularly. Now, we've got a lot of conditions in our permitting here, trying to get oil or water separators in the parking lots, installing filters into our catch basins in parking lots. We can't utilize street sweeping parking lots regularly to keep them clean. You guys can all imagine grocery stores, Home Depot, all those big trucks coming in and unloading all the material. A bag of fertilizer breaks open and it's just on the ground. Are they cleaning those up properly or not? And that's really what these lab results should help us zero in on and find the areas that are higher pollutants than not, and then trying to come up with a plan to attack that. But we're still kind of researching what is causing that, and we found a little bit, but we want to keep digging a little bit more to find out how we can try to prevent that stuff.
Quick question for Scott, if I could. I think those two constituents, they're not a things that a person would really be concerned about in the hydrologic or the
that I don't know how concerned you should or shouldn't be with regard to those, but I do think that those are in every parking lot in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you can't get around it.
And the levels that we saw, too, were pretty small, but that still doesn't mean we shouldn't chase down what it is, what might be contributing to that, and see if we can clean it up a little bit more.
Let's thank you very much, Mr. Spiker. Let's move on to agenda item 4, the presentation and discussion of a potential stormwater utility future budget scenario.
Oh, Chair Crocker, thank you so much. We are here yet again talking about budget scenarios. At the last meeting, you guys had asked for a simplification or breakdown of our annual budget. So Amy was kind enough to put together a little breakdown with a nice pie chart that kind of simplifies down what we're paying for, our budget expenditures, if you will. So let me pop those up so you guys can take a peek at them. So what we're looking at, we're just going to roll through this pie chart here really quickly because this is the easiest thing to look at. And then we've got the breakdown goes on the left-hand side. What this quickly tells you, our most significant expenditures in staff. And we've kind of talked about what that makeup is, but it is broken down over here. Obviously, we've got our office staff here. We've got our assistant public works director. We're paying for a small portion of his Ramsey's time over here. We've got our operators in here. So all of that kind of totals up to this big chunk of the pie piece over here. Next up, we've got our capital infrastructure repair, making up the next biggest portion over here. So these are projects and some of our maintenance work is sitting in, now that's over there. I believe these are just our projects, $407,000 worth of projects that we're looking at expending. Our next biggest one is our operations, which we just spent a whole ton of time talking about the needs for that. It makes up a pretty big chunk of our budget here. Administrative and financial services. Kind of have a bit of a breakdown there. Some payroll, general accounting, budgeting and monitoring, IT, GIS support. So,
Commissioners, those are just two examples. There's other ones broken down here, but we'll
Legal services and pretty much all the administration functions that are provided by the town, we are recipients of that work too. So we are allocating some money toward that. Commissioner Crocker.
Which of these are directly tied to the water, the stormwater fee? I mean, if the town gives 3% increase in people's salaries, does it come out? Where does that come from? General? Just which ones are directly affected by what we're going to be talking about?
Commissioner, the reason I put this together is because we kept looking at these charts here.
Yeah.
So this follows this chart, and one of the questions you kept asking is, well, what are we paying for? So that's what this answers. Literally, the fee pays for it all.
Okay.
So starting from the top with the personnel, which is the first expenditure you see here, it pays for 9.73% of the staff. If we get a raise and it's budgeted in there, that line item will go up by 3%. I mean, it's literally in the code that we're self-contained.
Okay.
I put in there, you know, I think somebody mentioned the health clinic costs. A lot of the services that we pay for outside are directly, again, related to 2.34% of the personnel is in stormwater. So they went out and they did this big study. So then the health clinic costs will pay 2.3% of that. Finance costs will pay 2.3% of that. The interesting thing about the administrative financial services, it's just not a percentage, which I was very glad to read through. I actually went through, because if we're going to ask, I can't remember which commissioner said it last time, But it's an absolute truth that I believe in. If you're going to ask for an increase, you better know what the increase is for. And is it necessary? So I will preface this by saying, after we have actually some good news. I don't think it's necessary at this time. I think we're in excellent shape. And one of the things working through here is, while they charge us for administrative services, that, again, is based totally on percentage if it's a service. But if it's like the GIS support, they offer that as a service for other departments. We have Scott. So we are not charged for GIS services because they are done within our own house. However, the other areas, PD and whatever, they don't have GIS services, so they have to pay for that. So this is 100%. Any of these vary, or there's an increase in inflation in any of these categories, it's directly related and needs to be funded by the fee.
Okay. Thank you. That would talk about some other questions. Won't be a little
great
good
explanation.
Yeah.
Well done.
So if we use the chart you're all looking at, it's literally following this chart. It's just trying to explain what's on this chart. So when you see the personnel here, well, these are the positions that personnel pays for. 9.73 includes part of my salary and my time spent here. It includes three heavy equipment operators. Well, it says three, it's more of their time and effort. So if you tell me, somebody wants to ask, well, which three? I go, I can't tell you which three.
Three full-time equivalents.
Yes, three full-time equivalents.
Yeah.
The health clinic costs, it's purely, you know, a percentage of how many we have. Other services, the whole other services category that you see is literally surveying, plan review, design review, any outside professional services that needs to be paid for. That varies year to year, but it's normally in the $60,000-$70,000 range. This year, there's extra money in our pot, and the guys went out and spent another $59,000, $49,000 this year on augmenting the DCM, the drainage criteria manual. That kind of professional services comes out of this.
Okay.
Normal O&M is literally that paperclip, that hard hat, gasoline, vehicle repairs, anything that you can think that it takes to run a business is in that line item. Very small, we don't do expend a lot here. We don't have a lot of expenditures. We buy our equipment once a year. The biggest expenditure that you'll probably find in this area is going to be gasoline, vehicle maintenance, because we spend a lot of time in our cars doing inspections and doing general items. The administrative and financial services. This year, I don't know if any of you guys had the opportunity to meet Carl Shaddock. He's our management analyst. He actually went through each of the categories you see listed on this spreadsheet: finance and budget, human resources, innovation and technology, legal, all of those, and said how much money each position, each area is spent, and whether it's a service or whether it's a support. And he calculated, you know, if it's a general service and it's human resources, that's payroll. Payroll is a straight, you know, calculation of time. So he did it based on salary. If it's not, he actually did it based on pulled hours. How much time does Chris Hutchinson spend on helping the stormwater utility build their budget? And it was pretty intricate. So it's not a straight across the board. It's literally based on, so in some cases, we pay a percentage of their hours because they're helping us. Legal helps us. But in other cases where they don't help us at all, like their GIS support, they get zero. So that was actually a nice little thing to go through, going, do they actually, should we be paying $166,000? Is it too high or too low? It's actually probably right on the money because they spent a significant time doing that. Minor assets and items, this is where we get our levels, our picks, our rakes, small items. If we had a truck to replace, this is where that would fall into, because a $38,000 truck is not considered major asset or a major CIP in there. And then we have, of course, the big line item, which is capital infrastructure repair. This is where we're talking about the Sierra Wash. This is where we're talking about the gravel pits and the Catalinas. If we have any of our 10-year plan, this is where you would find that. Some of the assumptions we put in building the 5-year were some of the things we talked about. No variable increases over the time period. Only a 5-year horizon because of 10-year horizon. I mean, honestly, anything past 2 years to me is really mucky, and that crystal ball becomes really muddy because we never know what's going to happen. Then we've got the projected no town pays for anything over. I moved it up to 300K because 250K seemed really low given the prices we're getting. And then to continue to secure outside funding sources. So I just wanted to sort of run down, you know, all these numbers and these charts we see. And what is in here? And are we doing good with the money we've got? And I went through this and I was going, yes, we got one. But we do really well. Because 5 years ago or 6 years ago when we went through, we wanted to be sustainable. We didn't want to have to go back to the community, and we pay for what we need. This year, and what you'll find new in your new charts, and why I came up with, wow, I'm not certain we need to ask.
I was going
to
have that same question.
Is the town council and the town manager have been looking at, we received ARPA funds for, and one of the good uses of ARPA is stormwater. They are granting us the money to pay for our Catalina Ridge and Sierra this year. So we've just got an influx of $399,000. We keep having very high success rates in grants and in securing funding. And with that, when you infuse nearly $400,000 worth of funding into the stormwater 5-year projection, you're going, oh, cha-ching, if we don't do anything, we can still sustain. Can we build a Mudders at $500,000? No.
Okay.
But one of the things this commission was going to discuss, should we? Is that too high? Or should we, you know, try to secure the funding? We all know that if we don't secure the funding for Highlands, we're not going to. We can't do Highlands. A $4 million project is not within the town's scope to do, not for stormwater. But we can continue to look for projects. We can continue to look for grants. We can continue to, if in 3 years a new ARPA comes in, a new, you know, we've had roadway projects done, we're ready to go. We have one shelf ready that we can go with. But so we created four more scenarios for you guys to discuss and review. And one of the ones I did, matter of fact, I told John, is the first one I want to talk about is the one that doesn't increase the rate. With everything else coming forward, with everything else we're looking at, with inflation being high and people trying to buy milk and eggs, is this the time that this commission wants to really raise rates when we've got everything funded? So I had a, you know, I'm one of those ones that wants to know where the nickel goes, and then if we have the ask, you make the ask for real, for something that you can come out and say, this is what we're going to build with it.
I'm much relieved to hear this because I was wondering what was going on with these trucks.
Oh.
We were talking about up to $6. Where did that go?
So the top chart.
Okay, so let's go. Who's leading us through?
Do you want to go through the charts? Let's start with the one that doesn't raise the
fee. Okay. Before we get to Commissioner Madsen, let's look at the first chart here, which should be at the top. No increase, but grant funding is realized or received.
Yeah.
So that should be the one we're looking at. This is really what Amy had just been describing for you. Before we get into it, Commissioner Madsen, do you have a question?
Well, that was my question. That compared to the next chart where we don't receive the grant funding.
Correct.
That's a concern. I mean, I'm very optimistic we're going to get it, but what happens if we don't?
And that's important to me to show that to you guys. If we do not receive outside funding, what happens to us? And that's starting to look a little more dour. There's only a few things we can do, but again, I want to go through the first one first here and just kind of highlight some of the things Amy talked about. So we've sharpened our pencils a little bit. We've got the grant funds received up here in the yellow like we saw last month. Those are still hanging in this particular, what I'd like to call status quo, is what we're showing right now in our books. Here is that almost $400,000 of ARPA funds coming into our revenue lines. We've added the dimension of the additional work for the grant criteria manual there. So as we get down to the bottom, we start to look at our reserves, and I believe we're going to look at this line here, our cash balance reserve, not our total reserves. You can see we're well above our threshold for 15% requirement. 15% is our requirement to have. Again, that's off the cash balance reserves there. So what we see, we've got our grant-funded projects coming in, encountered with the revenue that we will be receiving from FEMA. FEMA is not the only place we can get grant funds from. There are other locations that historically Stormwater has reached out to, but these ones seem real to us. I don't want to put every grant under the sun here. It's not realistic, but these are the ones we're shooting for and think we've got a good shot at receiving. What you will notice is the Mutter's Wash construction has not been rolled into the mix. I don't know if we looked at that in another scenario, but I think we are pushing that particular one off.
So if it has an asterisk in front of it, that means we're not considering it in these totals, just so that.
Right. It's earmarked, but it's not considered a part of our expenses here that we're envisioning. So again, doing nothing, $4.50, that's what we're holding today. Off into the five-year projection, we're well above where we need to be. So we could redirect some of these funds toward a future project, start kind of collecting it and sitting on it, build up a little war chest, and then deliver a project. We can look at delivering it toward maintenance if we have a need, hiring more staff, paying more health claim services. So this scenario right now shows us doing just fine, no real need to increase the rate, and actually having a surplus to direct towards something else. Any questions on this particular scenario right now? Commissioner Robinson?
On this scenario, are there any real critical projects that are going to be foregone without
grant funding,
funding increase, or any outside infusion of money?
Again, the only one on here, Commissioner Hawkinson, is Mutter's Wash. That was the channel that flooded out in 14. We are currently doing an alternatives analysis, but in the five-year projection, that project would not be done. So that one just wouldn't be built under the five-year projection here. That doesn't mean in the 10-year that it wouldn't be, but in the five-year window, that project would not be built. So I think that's the only one. We've got three Sierra Wash projects going. We've got some halfway work at the Pushbridge Golf Course. Pomegranate, we've got a bit of a roadway failure that is encapsulated here. Highlands Wash Project, again, grant funding received. That one will go as well. So most of the big ticket projects that we've got slated under this scenario will be able to be realized. Anybody else? All right, I'm going to bring up the next one, which should be no increase and no grant funding received. This one gets a little more interesting. If no one wants to help us out, what are we going to be looking at here? So again, we've stripped out all the grant funding here, still realizing the ARPA funds, that is coming to us, and is an outside revenue source, if you ask me. So, as Amy just mentioned a bit ago, asterisk, Highlands Wash does not get done. We just can't afford $4.5 million. No. That's a bridge too far, unfortunately, for us. But we are assuming we're going to try to do the Sierra Wash projects. We're doing the Bush Ridge pathway improvements. And we've also got a longer-term bank protection project out at Bush Ridge that we want to get working on with the resort.
The only difference between this, I think Commissioner Matheson asked, is that number right there. The reserve drops to 17.2.
It goes down to 17.
And we're still meeting the minimum 15. That's why when I was working through the numbers, I'm going, how do I ask for an increase when I'm still covering everything? If we discuss that without grant funding, Highlands is no longer viable anyways. So if you take that off the table, this is literally the same chart as the prior chart, but we're utilizing the overage in our reserves to better the community. And that's the intent.
So we're looking at a drop from 36 to 17 and then pushing that one big project out. So in essence, we're able to do an awful lot, still stay within our recommended and reserve, and we're not asking for any increases. So again, that $400,000 infusion goes a long way for us. We don't collect a lot of money every year. For about $1.4 million we collect on the stormwater fee. In the grand total of the town, that's not really all that much money.
Commissioner, so, I did confirm with Dave Gephardt that money is coming this way because I go, we're meeting with the commission, Dave, and if you infuse this money, it changes ballgame for the next 5 years.
And that is for this fiscal year, the end of June, so it's coming to us right now. So you don't have to wait for it. Any questions under this scenario? Again, very similar to the one you just saw. But we wanted to show it. But what happens if we don't get that grant money? What are we looking like? And we're doing okay. The next scenario we want to look at is I believe it's
475.
Increase with grant scenario. It should say $4.75.
Right.
No grant funding.
Grant funding.
Right. Oh, 75 cents. I've got two copies of that. So, Lord have mercy. Well, we're going to have to look at the screen.
I'm good.
Because somebody's an idiot. Me? I'm not dead for an hour. Okay. So this assumes grant funding coming. Okay. Right. So we're all loaded up here. But we wanted to see, well, what if we crank it up a little bit more? What could we do with this particular
This is with grant funding.
This is with grant funding. I didn't get it.
Okay. Pardon me.
No,
I thought we were first going over the one with no grant funding, then with grant. Being not optimistic.
Happy news.
My wife is always complaining I'm not a very optimistic person. He's got too much budget.
Bingo. So what we did on this particular scenario is adjust some of our general infrastructure maintenance costs. They're up significantly here from the previous iterations, and I'm going to show you that real quick. So here you can see general infrastructure, 50, and then going up based on inflation, essentially. And then culvert cleaning, you can see that going up incrementally with inflation, if you will. So the scenario we are currently looking at, if we go up and increase by a quarter and only out into the fifth year, we wouldn't be asking for a lot. What does that look like for us? Now, this would allow us to crank up our maintenance loads over here on both of these line items and do a little bit more work. But as we just walked you through the assets, could it use more? I could use more. To this tune, we're not quite sure, but this is where we would dump that money. Off the top of our heads. We're still delivering all the projects because we are still realizing grant funding here. And you can see we're still well above our 15% thresholds, but that extra quarter would allow us to do more maintenance work.
And likely save money in the long run because of the maintenance.
Presumably, Commissioner Matheson, if we get ahead of the curve and do more maintenance up front, it should, in theory, extend the life cycle.
of those assets and keep us out ahead of the curve. But as we did show you under the original status quo scenario, and I'm going to run back to this one, no increase here, we're still sitting on a pretty large pile of money that could, in theory, be redirected back into these line items. So we could go back and add more money into maintenance. We didn't even ask for some budget overrides. Like, hey, we just need more money for maintenance right now. Put more money in it because we're sitting well above our 15%. We're not going over our allocated budgets, so we can redirect that for this particular line item. We could, again, try to pull money up and fund a project like that. We could do that too. So the reserves are what they are. It's a reserve pile of money for us to do what we need to do. We need to hire more staff. We've got an influx of assets all of a sudden. Well, we actually have some extra money. Maybe we would look at that. But currently, right now, our staffing loads are staffed up adequately for my needs and my purposes. We're meeting the needs from our CED group. We're meeting the needs of the state and the feds. So I don't ascertain we really need more equipment or more staff right now. It's really in these two areas and the CIP areas that we could do more with. But we need to be judicious with that. I don't want to sit on a big pile of money and just be collecting money. We're not kingmakers here. So we want to be fair to the residents, but at the same time make sure we're staying out ahead of our maintenance needs. So we wanted to share that. What would an increase look like? So again, Amy put that together, but it's such a small increase.
25 cents.
25 cents. And that's the question for the commissioners. Is such a small increase worth the effort of going out to the public and holding public hearings, going in front of the council, and really asking for that increase? I told you guys last meeting, if we're going to do this, I really only like to do it once. Right. Make sure we're asking for an appropriate amount of money. But as this little scenario shows, even way out into 27, 28, there isn't much of a need for a large increase at this time. Now, the one that actually did print twice for you. It's so great we had to print it twice. An increase with no grant funds. And as we can see, we pushed this one back through, and this one should say on your top of your sheets, 6% increase in no grant funding. So what we're envisioning would be pulling it up 25, 26, which isn't too far away, and infusing again just a quarter, not a huge increase. You see the ARPA funds coming here. You see the increases across the board for maintenance work here. If no grant funding is realized, just like with the no increase scenario, we're not able to still deliver Highlands Wash Project. It's just too great of a... Bingo, Commissioner Mattson. It's too great of a cost. And we still hold at 15%. That was the magic number that Amy and I were trying to hit. But we're able to realize a bit more work on culvert cleaning and general infrastructure maintenance, which, as Commissioner Mattson just pointed out, should, in theory, extend the life of all of our assets here. Again, I do want to get somebody that asked, do you have, and I think it was Chair Crocker, do you have an average rating for all of your assets? I think that would be a pretty powerful data tool to show you guys to help you understand, is this warranted? Are we doing okay or not? You guys drive around town. We're doing okay. We could always do more. Do we need to do more? And again, based on our inspections that Scott was pulling down, it looks like we're doing better than most. So, I'm somewhat of the opinion that Amy started off with. I don't know that there's a true need at the current time to increase the stormwater utility fee. Unless you guys are seeing or hearing from others that there are several assets that are broken and that need to be repaired. We're just not seeing it out in the field at the current time. Chair Crocker.
I'd just like to say I'm very impressed with this.
done similar things as a maintenance manager, have a lot more confidence now that I've seen the cartograph system and understanding little parts. And I would certainly agree with the philosophy you have. Going for a small increase is not worth the effort at this time.
I appreciate the sentiments. I will let you guys know Amy and I's ultimate outcome of all of these studies is we've been looking at these for quite some time now. It's kind of mind-boggling. We do want to fashion a report of all the scenarios we've gone through. We would like you guys to make a recommendation one way or the other and put that into a report that we would come to the council with and share the results. I want them to understand how much work you guys have put into this, helping us analyze these things and better understand what our money is actually spent on and where we want to go in the future. So that will be an ultimate product out of all of these scenarios. And if you want to look at more, I'm not going to say we're more than happy to do more, but if you guys are looking for more scenarios and more detail, we are happy to put that together for you. But I really do think this latest iteration and infusion of new monies, which Rich can probably tell you what you're talking to, historically, that's how we've operated. We sought out additional revenue streams and been very fortunate to get them. I think that status quo mantra is still real for us. And there are federal and state monies out there to get us where we need to go. So I'm hoping the information Amy has put together really, I kind of want to put myself in that, demonstrates that we're doing okay.
So what I hear you saying is we're not going to try to decide on a scenario today. No. We're going to look at all scenarios and then make a recommendation. Is that what you're going
to do? Yeah, next time.
So what I would like to see, again, we chewed through, hell, we probably got a dozen scenarios that we floated out to you guys right now. We would like a global recommendation on a straight up and down, do we need an increase or not? That's the basis, and I'm not going to ask for that right now. We did put it in the agenda as a vote right now, but we will in the future need that recommendation from you guys. That's first and foremost. If we do decide as a commission to increase the rate, we're going to have to, again, do a little bit deeper dive and polish these numbers up, and then put some more presentations together. The overall report will happen one way or the other. I want to document what we've gone through and what we've discussed. That's important to me, and Amy and I have discussed that. Annually, we just kind of run through these, and staff recommends no increase, and that's what we send to the council. It needs to be a little more formal. And again, I want to document all the work effort that's been put together here. So first things first, we need a recommendation from the commission, yay or nay on an increase. And that's really up to you guys, but
that's
not
this particular meeting.
Not today.
I have three things I think we should be concerned about. Number one is that we have our reserves. I mean, we have a substantial amount of reserve here right now, which I think the taxpayers would right away jump on, okay? But we also have to be concerned about a contingency crisis that we may have. I'm not saying we may have one here. I doubt it. In Oro Valley, we don't have mudslides coming down a mountain or something like that and knocking out a road like they have in California or something like that. But we do have to be aware that some unforeseen issue that may arise, which could really deplete that contingency fee amount of money quickly. Because third issue I see is that we have an uncertain economy when it comes to the inflation cost. Anyone who goes around their house and has their houses sprayed, like I have over the past year, I've seen it gone up three times, the price of my spray, and I'm thinking of getting a different company because it just seems to be insane. It's gone 100% in a price in 1 year. So it's the inflation of the uncertain economy for us and you would appreciate that this is an engineer, the material cost you have. You can control, to some extent, our labor, because it's our, but material costs, we don't know that for the operation cost. Number four is that I am deeply concerned. I thought I said three, but I'm thinking.
I was going to say.
I got five, really, because I have a final one after.
He's got his foot in the door.
Is maintenance, is the concern that we have to maintain maintenance, and because I'm concerned about replacement issues that may arise in 3, 4, 5 years. That is tied to number five. And one of the things is, when you drive around Oro Valley, you know you're driving in Oro Valley. But boy, when you leave Oro Valley, you know that you've left Oro Valley. And that's one of our best, is the point we have a very good positive image in the region. You go out into Pima County, and you know you're in Pima. And I'll even say when you go to Marana, which is really our only real competitor, right? You know it's a difference between Oro Valley and Marana. And I think that's one thing I know the council wants to preserve. I know as taxpayers and homeowners we want to preserve is that we have a very good positive image. And that is tied a lot to the hard work you guys do, your department does, in maintenance and getting ahead of these issues. Because once you're behind it, it's very hard to catch up. And that's why I'm... So I'm not saying we need it this year, and I don't think we should, but I think we have to keep those points in mind next year or the year after that.
I appreciate those sentiments.
So those are the five points I have.
I want to talk about a few of these things, and I don't want to hold you guys too much longer, but I want to talk about a few of these things. Reserves net, uber important. It's in our code. We have to have that 15%. That does not mean we cannot use that money. It just means we have to ask to use it. But it is there for a reason, and it's really for emergency purposes. But it's not a big number. $250,000 is not going to go far. So we need to have an appreciation. What is that 15% really going to do for us? Might buy a piece of equipment. It might replace one cold box. Though it is in the code, what will it really do for us? Not a lot. But we have to reserve, we have to use it, so I like that.
Commissioner, 6 years ago, there was a discussion, even got to the council levels, about removing the 15%.
Right.
Because if we had a contingency crisis, had something happen, we knew that wasn't going to cover it. So what does keeping the balance in there, what does that do? So I just thought I'd throw that out there. Had that discussion, and if we had a crisis above this, we'd actually go to the general fund contingency.
Right. Yeah, and I appreciate you bringing that up, Amy, because second point for Commissioner Mattson was emergency funding, essentially, crisis funding. We can dip into it because it's going to impact more than just stormwater.
Mm-hmm.
More than likely, it could be parks, it could be facilities, it could be a road. So, we're all going to have to chip in and on crisis mode. In addition to that, FEMA would be there for us. FEMA County would be there for us. The state of Arizona would be there. You know, if the governor's declaring a state emergency, like Big Horn Fire, then other funds become open to us. So I'm not personally worried about setting funds aside for emergency purposes. Because, again, this funding ain't going to really do much for us. It might get the cops on the road to close the road, but it ain't going to fix it. So we will certainly be leaning into others to help us respond to an emergency. But it is something to plan for, and we do through our Office of Emergency Management. But I would like to assure you guys we will do everything we can to bring down the resources from others to help us out in a true emergency situation. Inflation costs, maintenance costs, inflation and uncertainty costs. We spin our numbers up regularly to account for cost increases and inflation. So these numbers you see here today for our CIP projects, when we revisit this for next fiscal year, you should see those spin up a little higher. Typically costs go up, sometimes they go down, but we're routinely going back and evaluating our cost estimates,
talking with our operations guys, hey, how much is gas? Oh boy, what if a dollar? We better adjust our budgets. So these real-time budgets do take into account some certain level of inflation and cost escalation. So we are cognizant of that, Commissioner Madsen. Maintenance, that's a tougher one, but as we've seen in some of these scenarios, we are cognizant. We're going to need more maintenance as we roll in toward the future. But even under that original status quo, we've got some money that we can redirect toward more maintenance. And then positive image, oh my goodness, this is why most of us are up here. Some of us might be here for the schools too. But it's really, it's how beautiful Oro Valley is and how clean it is. And I want to recognize Amy's efforts toward our adoptive programs, Adopt a Road and Adopt a Trail. The mayor's Keep Oro Valley Beautiful, Keep Oro Valley Clean programs, getting the citizens and volunteers to come assist us in cleaning things up. It provides a water quality benefit too. You get rid of that trash when it doesn't find its way into the wash. That's great. You keep your parking lot clean, guess what? The brake dust doesn't find its way into our outfalls. So I can't thank the public enough for chipping in and desiring to keep things clean. It really, really helps us out and absolves our operations guys from having to clean it up. And I don't want to see Circle K cups in the wash, neither does the public, so they clean them up. It's a tremendous opportunity the town has, and we've really embraced it, getting the residents to chip in and help out. And we have no desire to cut those programs. We want to keep cranking them up. And we just won an award from Cartograph, a Flag Forward Award for the Adopt a Road programs. We did a huge overhaul on how the public can access it, see what's available for cleanups, sign up, and communicate with us, and actually page this quickly.
I have to sort of clear up that I'm the person, the woman behind the director is Paige. She does all the work.
Yes, and she does a fabulous job of coordinating all those volunteers, because that's anybody that's worked with volunteers, they know it's a lot of extra work. But again, we do recognize those people annually. You were at the recognition dinner, Commissioner Madsen. Most of those people were our volunteers that do these side gig jobs for us. So it's a tremendous asset to the town, and we lean into it as much as practicable. So again, we're already touching on so many of those items that you brought up. But again, what we would like from you guys at a future meeting here, we're going to ask for a recommendation one way or the other about an increase. And then we'll generate a report that substantiates that recommendation from you guys.
Well, so we could close this topic and move on to the next one, which is future agenda items. Unless anyone else has a comment. Okay. Let's go to the future agenda items there. And I think that was one that you just mentioned, Don, Mr. Spiker, that recommendation, whether we have an increase or not. And I think we had one about a presentation from land acquisition people. And does anyone else have anything for a future agenda item?
I thought we were going to ask for the insurance, flood insurance presentation again sometime.
He's
not busy.
Risk rating 2.0, we need to understand what that's at, okay? I would, on the backs of our Cartograph presentation, that's basically the back end of what we do. I want to show you guys the front end of what we do.
Great.
Drainage review, subdivision inspection, our smart gov routing process, which is another piece of software we use. But I want to bring Dennis in at a future date and show you the front end of what we're doing.
Great.
Because you've heard plenty about the back end, but well, how do we know what we're maintaining? What should we be maintaining? So I'd like to put that on for a future topic too, is our smart gov drainage report review.
Okay. Anyone else have any suggestions? Okay. Let's move on to adjournment. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
I move that we.
Commissioner Madsen?
Second.
Commissioner Hawkinson? All those in favor?
Aye.
So moved. We are adjourned.
Scott.